We're thinking a lot about sustainability in all sorts of areas of our lives. Food. Food is a critical one. And perhaps the answer to that, the idea of sustainable food, perhaps that answer is under the sea. And when we talk about that, we're not just talking about fish. Fish taken from overfished waters, that microplastic peppered ocean. No, the solution... Well, the solution may be more complex. It may involve a fair bit of seaweed. Brent Smith, he is leading a campaign to get people to rethink, well, sea-based agriculture and the way they eat. He joins us via Skype. Brent, hello.
Hello. It's an honour to be here.
You have an extraordinary life journey from industrial fishing to this really interesting, complex, multifaceted aquaculture you practice now. Take us for a little cook's tour of your career path.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just a regular guy. I dropped out of high school when I was 14 and headed out to sea. And I fished the Grand Banks, George's Banks, was in the Bering Sea for a long time. So tuna, mackerel, no matter what, you name it, I fished it. The trouble was I was fishing at the height of industrialized food production. This was in the 80s. And most of the fish I was catching was going to McDonald's. For the fish sandwich, we were tearing up entire ecosystems with our trawls. So, it was probably 19 or 20, and the cod stocks crashed back where I'm from in Canada, in Newfoundland. And that was just stunning, 30,000 people thrown out of work overnight. And that's where I learned, listen, there aren't going to be any jobs on a dead ocean. These environmental issues, sustainability, they're actually not about birds and bees. They're kitchen table issues, and it's for, if I want to die in my boat one day, which is my goal, we got to figure out a new relationship to the ocean.
And this is a conversation that people are having on land as well. And it's interesting that the outcome, is kind of similar. When you talk to, big monocultural farmers, they have on land, they have a similar path forward, which is to get increasingly intricate, multifaceted agricultural enterprise that does a whole lot of things. And that is a suddenly sustainable way forward. And you've found ways of doing that underwater.
Yeah, I mean, Mother Nature abhors monoculture. When you do it, she just throws all these things at you, disease, pests, no matter what it is. And what we've been trying to figure out underwater is say, okay, what's unique about the ocean as an agricultural space? I mean, traditionally what's happened, so you overfish the salmon, the cod, the tuna, and then aquaculture comes along and tries to grow those things that the market wants,
yep.
Right? But the trouble is salmons, tunas, all those things are a wild palate, right? It's a wild taste developed over hundreds of years. And instead, when you ask the ocean a real simple question, what do you want us to grow? It says, why don't you grow things that you don't have to feed and don't swim away? And as soon as you listen to that, you realize it's easier to grow seaweeds than fish. Shellfish are not only sustainable but restorative species. There are just thousands of different things we can grow underwater that we don't have to water, we don't have to feed, we don't have to fertilize, make it hands down the most sustainable kind of food production on the planet, and also breathes life back into the ocean.
And you call this restorative ocean farming. What are the products that you get from that? What are you taking from those farms?
Yeah, so we grow, my farm, I grow oysters, mussels, scallops, clams, and then kelp and gracilaria, all different kinds of seaweeds. Basically just, as many different species as we can grow in a 25-acre area. And we use the whole water column. So we're, we call it 3D farming, yep. Because we don't really have to fight gravity underwater. All you need is some, anchors and then ropes up with buoys at the surface, kind of a rope scaffolding system, and then you grow all different species using that system, which makes it cheap, right? It's like $20,000 to $50,000 to start a farm, depending on where you are. You can be up and running.
What's the downside of that? I mean, if suddenly our coastlines are full of that sort of 3D ocean farming, does that have any sort of any sort of negative impact, or is that just a complete positive from every way you look at it?
Yeah, I mean, I think we... traditionally, the debate about the oceans has been about, okay, do we fish it or do we do conservation? And the issue with conservation at this point, you know, marine parks, which are wonderful, I really support them, but we could set aside the entire ocean as a marine park, and it's still going to die because of climate change. Like, we need a new strategy as environmentalists. And so, yeah, there will be aesthetic impact. Now, the good thing is we're just talking about buoys and ropes, and anybody can boat and swim and fish over the farms because they're underwater. So there's still community spaces, but there will be an aesthetic impact. But as a homeowner, you know, as a shoreline owner, but also someone that needs to eat food, cares about the future of the planet, you know, there's going to be a transition and trade-offs. Listen, I'm a commercial fisherman. The last thing I ever wanted to do was grow vegetables. It's the most embarrassing thing anybody's ever asked me to do. And quite honestly, you know, seaweeds are disgusting, right? So like, here I am in a career that God knows I didn't want to do, but this is part of the transition, I think, that we all need to make.
Do you still find seaweed disgusting?
Well, I mean, that's been, you know, I just wrote this book, Eat Like a Fish, and I went on this journey. And, you know, I discovered this whole lost culinary history of seaweeds. And McDonald's even had a seaweeds burgers in the 1990s. For 4 years, became the official dish of the National Basketball Association here in the U.S.
Is that true?
I mean, who guessed? And then, you know, the Scots and the Irish had seaweed in the bar all the time as a bar snack to get people to keep drinking. Italians made fritters. Like, wherever there have been people near the ocean, we've been eating sea vegetables. Yep. It's just been pushed off the plate. So the revival of that culinary history is sort of fascinating. And, you know, my wife's a real foodie. She's from L.A. And she really taught me that you can't think of this as sort of seafood. You need to think of seaweeds as vegetables. And as soon as you do that, you stop making seaweed salads and wrapping around fish. You do things like barbecue kelp noodles with parsnips and breadcrumbs, right? It completely de-sushifies it. So I think there is a sort of a journey of taste that we can go on that'll really, you know, make it less disgusting. But the other thing I'd say is we don't have to just eat it. Why I have real hope for this is that, yeah, we can move sea greens and shellfish to the center of the plate, but we can also make it the soy of the sea, but not evil, right? Soy, we know, is problematic because of its deforestation and all this sort of stuff. But seaweeds can be woven into and be used as fertilizers, animal feed, as bioplastics. The London Marathon just used seaweed water bottles for all their athletes. Like, imagine that, right? We have this plastics problem in the ocean. How about I actually grow seaweeds? We turn them into bioplastic and replace our fossil fuel, petroleum-based packaging, right? It's stunning. So that's what's exciting, is we've got sort of a dual strategy that we can do. And I mean, you know, the land-based farmers, the big challenge is there's a nutrient crisis on land. There's just not enough nutrients to grow the amount of food we need to grow. Well, it's all in the ocean. You want carbon, nitrogen, phosphorus, micronutrients, all there. I can collect it with my kelp and bring it back to land-based farms and, you know, grow those delicious vegetables we all love. I think the future of farming for someone like me is this mix of sort of growing food, also harvesting data and harvesting ecosystem services. So what I mean by that, like, food is obvious, but we have sensors in four different states right now, and all of our farmers get paid $25,000 a piece to harvest data, because that data is really valuable that you're pulling, you sell to scientists, tech companies, government, things like that. And then things like blue carbon also have a value. And so, since our kelp and other seaweeds soak up all these, they're great carbon sinks, that has a real value. So I think we need to think of the ocean is a, you know, unique agricultural space, and reimagine the farm in the era of climate change as this sort of this diverse ecosystem of both values and of food.
Are you seeing, I mean, in that data and in your experience, are you seeing a changing of the trend? Can we save those imperiled spaces? Can we save our oceans?
I mean, I mean, or die trying, right? That's like, my patch of ocean used to be this barren, you know, ecosystem, because the oyster reefs were our coral reefs here up on the east coast of the U.S. And now it's this thriving ecosystem where we have 150 different species that come and like hide and eat and thrive. We've got seals, we've got ducks, we've got, you know, there's just all this activity because we're cultivating and being stewards of these patches of land. So the more and more more we have people out farming doing that sort of agroforestry in the ocean, I think that's going to be that's our hope for saving our ocean.
Do we can this scale up? Can this become a can we fill our coastlines with enterprises of this sort?
Well, so the World Bank did a study, and they said if you took less than 5% of U.S. waters, you could create 50 million jobs, the protein equivalent of 3 trillion cheeseburgers, and the carbon sequestration output of 30 million cars. That's in less than 5% of U.S. waters, mm-hmm. right, doing this type of farming. And our view of scale is not 1,000-acre sort of big banana plantations at sea, but network production. So I started GreenWave, which is a nonprofit, which is out there training and trying to, scale up the industry. And what we think of is GreenWave Reefs, where you have 50 small-scale farms in an area, a processing hub and a hatchery in struggling communities. We place them very strategically, and then rings of entrepreneurs doing value-added products. And then you replicate those reefs up and down the coast. We're working in 7 states here in the U.S. We have a waiting list of farmers of 4,000, and we've got requests to start farms in 20 countries around the world. I mean, there's a huge amount of momentum. I mean, listen, our food system's being pushed out to the ocean, and we're going to have to figure out a way to grow food, and hopefully we can do it the right way and sort of do food and agriculture in a way that sort of captures all those lessons from the last 100 years and does it right.
All sorts of extraordinary and exciting possibilities in this, Bryn. Congratulations on fetching up where you have. That's quite a thing.
I tell you, this certainly wasn't the plan. I tell you, I didn't plan on hanging out with arugula farmers and drinking tea. But this is what life gives you. So,
if you want to find out more about both Bryn Smith's life and this vision of restorative aquaculture of ocean farming, Eat Like a Fish is the book. Yes, you can do as it says. It's as it's described on the tin. That's out now in shops. Author is Bryn Smith, and this is Blueprint here on RN.